Okay, so we're going to talk about a number of different things, Bezras Hashem, over here. When was the Torah given? When were the mitzvos given? What is the basis of machlokas? What is the concept of a chiddush? And the like. And I think we'll try to move things quickly, but it will take a couple of shiurim. And I want to start with, I guess, a very basic question, which relates to a pasuk from a couple of weeks ago's Parsha, Parshas Mishpatim, which is, when was the text of the Torah given? So we generally assume that when we say the Torah is given at Sinai, well, what does that mean? So it seems inconceivable that Hashem would have given the entire text of the Torah at Sinai. For example, if Moshe had known that the Jewish people, let's say from our Parsha, were going to sin with the Chet HaEgel or something like that, He wouldn't have been so surprised when it happened, or the story of the Meraglim probably would have turned out a little differently, or the like. So certainly it doesn't mean that the text of the Torah was given at that point. So what was given? So the pashtus is that it means the mitzvos were given. We'll see there are problems with that assertion as well, which we'll get back to in a minute. Does that mean that there was no text given? So in Parshas Mishpatim, we do find that there was something like a text. Moshe reads from the Sefer HaBris at Sinai. So what is that Sefer HaBris? So Rashi over there says that this is referring to the entire Torah until that point. So the Bereishis and the first half of Shmos, or first section of Shmos. And that's Ramban over there is a different view. He also understands that there was some type of text given to Moshe Rabbeinu. You have it over here. Rashi's on Shmos Chaf Dalet Aleph. And Ramban, so Ramban is unsure. The Ramban, he thinks that he both expands it and maybe contracts it as well. He thinks that this took place after the Aseres HaDibros were given, but before Moshe went up for the 40 days. And so that's a discussion. But be that as it may, we don't have to get into the details of this. There was some type of text, though it's not entirely clear what it was. What about the rest of the Torah? When was that given to Bnei Yisrael, the rest of the text of the Torah? So this is discussed in the Gemara in Gittin on Daf Samech Amud Aleph. So it relates to Yeshivas Masechta. I don't know how many of you got up to get in the Samach Amud Aleph, but if you take a look, and that's on your Makoro sheets, that's right after the Ramban that we just quoted. Oh, no, there's after the Ramban. So we have here Machlokas. I'm Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Benah. Torah Megillah Megillah Nitna, Shenemar Az Amarti, Hinei Basi Megillah Sefer Kasuv Alai. Rabbi Shimon Ben Lachish Omer. Torah chasuma nitna, shenemar lakuach ha-sefer ha-torah hazos. V'idach nami haksiv lakoach. So how would Rav Yochanan deal with that pasuk? Hahu labasar de'idbak. In other words, it was originally given Megillah Megillah, then it was glued together, as it were, and that's when this pasuk is referring to. V'idach nami haksiv b'megillah sefer kasuv alai. So that supports Rav Yochanan. Hahu dechalatar kula ekri megillah dechsev byomer elai ma ta roeh byomer ani roeh megillah afa, which is a referring to the Torah. Okay, so we have a machlokas Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. So what do these two opinions mean? So first of all, we should note that both opinions will presumably agree that the entire text of the Torah wasn't given until the end of the 40 years at the desert. The question is whether there was some type of written document before that. According to Rabbi Yochanan, it was Megillah Megillah Nitna, meaning to say given in installments, scroll by scroll. And according to Reish Lakish, the entire thing was given Chasuma at the end. That's a simple understanding of the Gemara. Yeah. Now, let's try to elaborate. According to Rabbi Yochanan, the Torah was given Megillah Megillah, meaning that Moshe wrote each directive, you know, as it came up over the course of the 40 years. So that at the end of the 40 years, the Gemara says that these scrolls were sewn together, and then they had a single unit. So it seems that there are many scrolls. The Ramban writes, you have over here, that it was actually only two. Megillah, Nitna, meaning two Megillos. So there was one that was given after Moshe came down from Sinai. That's what we referred to before. And the second that was at the end of the 40 years. And at that point, Moshe merged the two documents. Likewise, there's a Moshlokas, how to understand Reish Lakish Shita. According to Reish Lakish, it would seem nothing was written until after the 40 years. The problem is, as we noted before, from the Parsha, the Pasuk in Shmos Chav Dalet, it seems like there was something beforehand. So this is difficult. Rashi on Gittin sounds like there was nothing written until the end. Until the end of the 40 years, the teachings of Hashem were entirely oral. And the Ramban sort of echoes that in his Hakdama to Sefer Bereishis. But Tosfos over there in Gittin says that's impossible. Because what about the Sefer Bris that we just read of? The Sefer Bris sounds like Moshe was reading from something. So clearly even Reish Lakish agrees that the text was given in installments. So what's a debate, whether it's Chasuma Nitna or Megillah Nitna? So the question, according to Tosis, is was Chasuma Nitna, were they given in order? That's what Chasuma Nitna means. So that at the end, all that was needed to do was to sew the scrolls that were given as they were given. Or is Megillah Nitna, meaning it was given out of order and needs to be reconfigured? Fine. Al Kolpanim, everybody agrees, seemingly, that the complete text of the Torah that we have was only completed at the end of the 40 years. Now, is that so pashut? Does everybody agree to that? So here there are a number of issues that come up. One of them that the Gemara addresses is the final psukim of the Torah. So the final eight psukim describe the death of Moshe. Who wrote them? Could Moshe have written about his own death? So you could have said, yeah, why not? The Torah was written by prophecy, and Hashem told him to write. Moshe was writing like the Rambam says, the stenographer, who's just copying down the words. And so why couldn't he have written the last eight psukim? But it's interesting, the Gemara is troubled by that possibility. So if we look at the next source, Bava Basra, Tesvav Amud Aleph, Netanya, Vayama Shem Moshe, Avet Hashem, Efshem Moshe Chai, Vekasa, Vayama Shem Moshe, Ela Adkan Kasav Moshe, Mikan Va'elach Kasav Yeshua. So the first opinion over here, the view of Rabbi Huda, was was that it was actually Yehoshua that wrote the final eight psukim, which is very shocking to us. You know, at first we always think of Taras Moshe, but actually the final eight psukim were written by Yehoshua. And we'll talk about the significance of the possibility of non-Mosaic authorship of the Torah. But first, let's see the second opinion. Amar Rabbi Shimon, after Sefer Torah Chaser Osachas V'Ksiv B'Lakoach as Sefer Torah Zat. In other words, there was already a Sefer Torah Bizman Moshe, and the Sefer Torah that's missing a single letter is possible. So clearly, the Torah was finished even before Moshe went up to Har Nevo. So Allah Adkan Hakadosh Baruch Hu Omer Moshe Omer V'Kosev. Until this point, HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke, and Moshe spoke and wrote. Interesting, Ha'ara. Maybe we'll get back to it. Why does it say Moshe Omer V'Kosev? Why does it say HaKadosh Baruch Hu Omer and Moshe Kosev? Mikan Va'elach, so after for the final eight psukim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Omer U'Moshe Kosev B'Dema. So first of all, Moshe isn't Omer. And second of all, is Kosev B'Dema. Okay, we have to figure out what that means. So what does that mean? According to Rashi in Menachos on Daf Lamed Amud Aleph, Dema means crying. So Moshe was crying when he wrote these final psukim. Yad Ramah explains that Rabbi Shimon means that he didn't write these psukim with ink, but rather with tears. In other words, that was the, wasn't that Moshe was crying, it was the ink was used was tears. And finally, the Gra suggests that Dema should be understood as confusion, not tears, but confusion, like Demai. So the Gemara is saying that Moshe wrote the letters of the Psukim without separating them into words. And the death of Yehoshua, you know, after the death of Moshe, so Yehoshua separated the letters. How does that solve any problems? In other words, you know, I guess the question we have to figure out in general is, what would the problem with Moshe being writing it, and how is it solved by either writing in tears, writing by crying, or writing in this confused manner? It would seem that the pshat is, according to most mefarshim, that it was an issue of writing a falsehood. That's where the Gras seems to understand it. And he says, well, it's not a falsehood if it's just a bunch of confused letters, letters that don't really make sense on their own. So it's okay for Moshe to write them. In a certain sense, it's actually interesting. According to the Gaon, the view of Rabbi Shimon is much closer to the view of Rabbi Yehuda and Nehemiah, in the sense that Yoshua had a role, but his role was more limited. Namely, his role was not as the writer, but sort of the interpreter. Again, I think one can spend a lot of time trying to understand these different approaches, but for now, let's keep moving. So the question is there an accepted approach over here? In other words, who do we paskin like? Did Yoshua write part of the Torah? From the Gemara, truly.
Didn't the Gemara's issue seem to be from the Gemara that it wasn't necessarily saying that it came from Moshe, or like meaning not from Hashem, but that it came from Moshe Mipi Atzmo, which means seemingly the emphasis on the Mipi Atzmo, and that like exchanging Moshe for Yoshua, as long as one says it's not Mipi Atzmo, would seem to be fine.
We're going to make that point sort of in a different context in a moment. Where do you see that from the Gemara?
From Sanhedrin, it says,
Zeshalo Amra HaKadosh. We didn't read that Gemara yet.
No, isn't it the first one?
It's the first Makor, but we didn't learn it together yet.
I got it a few minutes late, so I assume that we saw it.
Yeah. No. We're not. So far, we just saw the Gemara in Bava Basra. It's a fair point, but that's nothing to do with anything we've seen. The Gemara in Bava Basra is two deos as to who wrote the last eight psukim. Was it Moshe? Was it Yeshua? And it doesn't say anything about the concern, according to the Pashtus of the Gemara, according to it seems like the Mefarshim, is one of Shekler. In other words, how could Moshe have written something that isn't really true? How could he write? It's inaccurate to write Vayamas if it's not true. That's what the Gemara says. Now, you could ask, how does the saying he wrote it Bedema solve that problem? So, for example, the Marsha says that by writing it in tears, so that indicates that the event had not yet happened, and that would imply that it wouldn't be, it wouldn't suggest that it's false. And that's why there's another difference, right? That's why it says that Adkan Moshe Omer v'kosev nikan v'elach kosev bedema. To say Vayamas Moshe would have been false, and to write it with ink would have been false. But to write it with tears, so that wouldn't be false. According to the Gra, it wasn't false because the words had no meaning yet until Yoshua separated them. So the different mefarshim we saw, the three different mefarshim explain how we'd solve the problem in a different way, but either way, okay. So the question is, who do we paskin like? Did Yoshua write the final psukim or not? So for the Gemara, we don't know. There's no, I think, clear evidence. Moreover, it would seem that the concept of psak here should be irrelevant. L'chora, there's no practical difference. The Rambam writes that when there's a practical nafkamina, that's what we need a paskin. If there's no nafkamina, so we don't need a paskin. And there's no clear nafkamina over here. I could say that there's a little bit of a nafkamina in terms of, originally, I would say, in the Gemara, thought that the nafkamina was in terms of Yachad Korei Osam Yachid Korei Osam. But the Gemara concludes that actually that's not a nafkamina. Both opinions would uphold that special status. So not clear, if we should even talk about who's right. If you look at the Hagos Maimonios, though, we have over here from Hilchos Tefillah, he's medayik from the Rambam in Hilchos Tefillah, Yud Gimel Vav, that we accept the view that Moshe wrote the final eight psukim. It was not Yoshua. Why would that be? Presumably it's because the Gemara gives Rabbi Shimon the last word. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemia don't ask the kasha. Rabbi Shimon asks the kasha, right? Could a Sefer Torah lacking a single letter be valid? Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemia don't answer. So that would suggest that we paskin like the opinion that Moshe wrote the last psukim. Rambam, when presenting the Ikari Amunah in Perek Achela, in his Akdamah to Perek Achela, also sounds like he thinks that it's an Ikar Amunah that Moshe wrote every word of Torah. If you take a look, Yesod Hashmini Hu Torah Min Hashamayim. V'hu Shanamin Shakol HaTorah Zu Anim Tzeis B'yadeinu Hayom Hazeh. Hi HaTorah Shanin Ala Moshe V'shikula Mipi HaGvura. So the entire Torah we have, we have to figure out what does Kol HaTorah Hazu mean. But the entire Torah is that's in our hands was given by Moshe Mipi HaGvura. Kilomar, Shehigia Ilav Kula Me'es Hashem Haga'a Shekarno Sal Derech HaShala Dibor. It was communicated to Moshe to what we refer to as Dibor. It's not actual Dibor because Dibor is a physical thing. It's not Shaykh Ba'akadosh Baruch Hu, but we could analogize the method of communication between God and Moshe Rabbeinu as Dibor. Ve'en yodei ichosos aga elahu alav hashalom ashegiyo elav. Now, there's only the prophet that received this communication. Only Moshe could understand the nature of this communication. Moshe was like a lavler. He was like a scribe or a stenographer. He was just writing down the words that Hashem said. That's why Moshe is referred to as the mechokek. And therefore, he says, what are the implications of this? Bein havdel, bein uvnecham, kush u'mitzrayim u'put v'knan, v'shem ishto me'tavel bas matreid. There's no difference between these seemingly unimportant psukim and the most important psukim. Hakol mepi avura v'akol Torah sashem t'mima t'hoira k'doisha emes. V'lo nasa menashe etzlam kofer u'poker yosem hikol kofer acher. Ela lefi shechashav sheyesh b'Torah tov v'klipa. In other words, what made Menashe a kofer was that he thought that there are aspects of the Torah which are like silly, not very valuable. It's a very interesting point. What does one thing have to do with the other? In other words, we have these aspects, these psukim in Torah, that don't seem to be very valuable, chronologies and names and the like. So what did Menashe say? Menashe said two things. He said, well, these are pretty pointless things, facts, information that's not very valuable. And Moshe himself said that. Maybe Menashe agreed that if they were from God, they would be infinitely valuable. So his two sort of heresies go together. So that's the idea of Tarmin Shemaim. Amru Shehu Omer Shekol Torah Kula Mepi HaKadosh Baruch Hu Hutz Mipasuk Echad Shelo Yavru HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ela Moshe Mepi Atzmo V'Zehu Kidvar Shem Baza. So someone who goes ahead and says that the entire Torah is from God, except for even one pasuk, that is a kofer b'Torah, as the pasuk says about such a person, kidvar shem baza, ta'ala Hashem mimash omem ha-kofer, ala kol o sheba yesh b'chachmos v'niflaos l'misha v'ino Hashem. Again, the Rambam emphasizes the same point. It's not just that the Torah is from God, but it reflects infinite wisdom. The lotusag tachlis chachmasa, and we can't really fully appreciate the degree of the wisdom in Torah, rucham yatzmida, v'chav minayam, v'ein l'adam elo l'spalo, k'mo David Mishiach elokei Yaakov, shespalo gal einai v'abita neflos mitar sechel. So all we have to do is daven. There's nothing else we could do, because when we approach a pasuk, we should ask Hashem to open up our eyes so that we understand its meaning and its significance. V'chein Perusha. So now the Rambam adds something else, and we're going to spend more time on this. First, we're going to work on the text, then we'll talk about this point, but we'll read the whole thing as well. So V'chein Perusha, also the perush of the Torah, the interpretation of the Torah, Gam hu mipi ha-gvura. V'zashanu osim ayom tur sasukah v'lul v'shofar v'tzizit v'filin v'zulasam hi atma ha-tzura sh'amar Hashem l'moshe the Amar Lahu. So that which we make today, we have tefillin, we have sukkah. The tefillin that we wear is the very same tefillin that Hashem told to Moshe. V'hu rak movil shlichus ne'man b'ma shehivi. Moshe was simply a messenger, a credible messenger, bringing this information from God to the Jewish people. Vadibar Moral Yesoda Ze Hashmini Hu Amel Bezos Tedun Kiania Ki Hashem Shalachani Vehulai Ki Lo Bilibi. Moshe says that this is not something I've made up, but it is entirely from the Ribbono Shel Olam. So that is the Rambam's Yesod HaAmuna. So the simple reading does suggest that he accepts the view of Rabbi Shimon that the entire Torah is written by Moshe. Is there nafgamina? So maybe we'll say, we said the Gemara's initial nafgamina was rejected, and by Yachad Karyosam, is there any other nafgamina? Maybe the nafgamina would be that if you deny it, you're a kofer. In other words, someone who says that one pasuk or eight pasukim were written by Yeshua is a kofer. That's interesting, because that means two of the Tanaim would be kofer according to the Rambam. So first of all, where did the Rambam get this idea from? This idea that if we deny a single pasuk coming from Moshe Rabbeinu, it's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Chaf Tzadi Tesman Aleph, Tanya Idach. So this is the pasuk, the Gemara that Shirley was referring to. Kidvar Hashem Baza, Ha'omer Ein Torah Min Hashemayim. Vafilu Amar Kol Torah Kula Min Hashemayim Chutz Min Pasuk Zeh Shalei Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ela Moshe Mipi Atzmo Zehu Kidvar Hashem Baza. Vafilu Amar Kol Torah Kula Min Hashemayim Chutz Min Dikduk Zeh Mikama Chomer Zeh Mikzeh Rashavazu Harei Hu Zehu Kidvar Hashem Baza. This is a very interesting, because it's not just that if you say that a single pasuk is from not from Moshe, let's say you say Yeshua wrote a pasuk, that would be Tfira. You want to go to your cribby?
Yeah.
Okay, you could go. But he says even more. You need help going into your cribby?
Yeah.
But it's very early. Okay. I have to excuse myself for 1 minute. But what's interesting is that it says even Kavachomer comes these guys. Even a Kavachomer is for Moshe Rabbeinu, if you say that is Kvira. Kavachomer is for sure man-made, right? So you could darshan a Kavachomer Miatzma. So the question is, what does this mean? I'll be 1 sec.
Are you dropping your snacks?
Yeah.
Do you want to put them in the bag? No.
Sorry about that, guys. As I mentioned, his babysitter is not around today. Okay, so what are we saying over here, right? We say even a Kal Vachomer, if you say any is not divine, so that's Dvar Hashem, Baza. So what's coming out? So the Rambam, as we said, sounds like he's saying, if you say even a single pasuk was not written by Moshe, such a person is a kofer. So does that mean that he's saying that the view of Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Nechemia, who maintained that the last eight psukim were written by Yehoshua, that such a statement is considered kfira? Well, let's say we won't call them a kofer, but at least now that view is kfira. So maybe not. And this is what Sruli was referring to before. If you look at the way he puts it in Hilchos Tshuva, Perek Gimel, Halacha Ches, Shlosh Shein HaKofrim B'Torah, HaOmer Shein Torah Me'im Hashem, Afilu Pasuk Echad, afilu teva achas im amar Moshe amro mepi atzmo hareze kekofer betora. So someone who says that the Torah is not divine, even a single pasuk, that is kfira. So that's clear. In other words, without question, anyone who says that even one word of the Torah is not divine, that, according to the Rambam, is a heretic. It's not clear if someone affirms the divinity of the Torah, but simply maintains that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Yoshua to write the final eight psukim, is a kofir. The Rambam certainly agrees, I think, that such a person is erring. Now, there's a view of Rabbi Yeshua ben Chaimya is wrong. Rabbi Yehuda ben Chaimya is incorrect. That's for sure, according to Rambam. But I don't know if it's kfira, because what they're basically saying is that the entire Torah is divine. It's just that the last eight psukim were written by Yehoshua, who's also a Navi. So if that's correct, in other words, if it's correct that the Rambam is not necessarily saying that the definition, when we say he's not a kofer, so the practical implications to kfira, among other things, is their shchita value, you know, valid. Rabbi Yehuda ben Chaimya is not kfira because they're fully upholding the divinity of the entire Torah, even though they're claiming that the final psukim of the Torah are written by Yehoshua. In other words, the main point that the Rambam is trying to make is he's trying to uphold the divinity of the Torah. Now, it is true that when we look at the Perush HaMishnayos from the Hakdamat HaChelek, it does sound like, even if you say anyone besides Moshe wrote that. So it's an interesting question whether every single thing in the Hakdamat Perek HaChelek, where he presents the Ikar Yamuna, does that, if you deny any part of all of that statement, are you a kofer or no? If you deny the main point of that statement, the main point of that statement is the absolute divinity of the Torah. A prat in that is that the Torah was written entirely by Moshe, because that's the view that the Rambam thinks is correct. But if you subscribe to the other view, the view of Rabbi Yehuda, it doesn't mean you're a kofer, even though as long as you uphold the divinity of the Torah. So that could be what the Rambam means. And if that's true, before we get there, Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva on this topic, which you have over here. Rav Moshe maintains that it would be heretical, if you take a look over here, to suggest that the Anshei Knesset HaGadola amended the Torah. Now, why is that? I mean, what if, as long as it was done, under divine guidance, as long as we're upholding the divinity of the Torah, why is that kfira? So Rav Moshe writes over here that the view that Yehoshua wrote the final psukim is fundamentally consistent with the Rambam's principle, because the psukim were composed in the same way that Moshe wrote the rest of the Torah, like a stenographer. As opposed to, if you were to go ahead and claim that it was amended or changed later by the Anshei Knesset HaGadola. I'll read you a little bit from this tshuva that you have over here. So he writes, Mevor b'fersha Rambam Misod Hashmini, Shemoshe hayarak hosev ma shenikra mepi agvura, ulefikach nikra mechokek, bein hefresh bein uvnei chan kush, like we saw, umitzrayim v'shem yishto vei tavel, v'timnoi sepulagesh, uvein anokhish amokhav v'shema Yisrael, hakol mepi agvura, mefurash kain bebava basra daf tesvav, the lack of machlokas mitzrayim, al shmona psukim, eladri rabbi Yehuda, v'amri labim nechamia kasvan Yoshua, gam kain b'dachza, Shakarish Baruch Hu Amar Kol Teva Teva. Bizu, so the os v'os, so that was true. That was true. Reb Shimon, Gam Hashmonim Sukkim Kasim Moshe. So according to Reb Moshe, it would seem that it's okay. It wouldn't be heresy to say that Yehoshua wrote the final Psukim, as long as you say that they were written in the same way that the Torah, the rest of the Torah was written. The context of this tshuva is actually a little bit interesting. It relates to a manuscript from Rabbi Yehuda Chassid that was discovered that seems to indicate that parts of the Torah were amended by the Anshei Knesset HaGedola. And Rav Moshe says, that's incorrect. It must be a forgery or an error or something like that, because that would be kfira. And he urges that it not be published. At least those statements were a forgery. So let's keep that in mind for now. Rav Moshe's view will be very important. I want to talk at least for a couple minutes about the view of the Ibn Ezra. And then maybe we'll get back to that too from Rav Moshe. So the Gemara presents the possibility that Yehoshua wrote the last eight psukim. The Ibn Ezra writes, at least on a level of pshat, that perhaps we should extend it to 12 psukim, not just eight psukim. He starts there because they describe Moshe's ascent to Har Nevo. So Moshe could not have written those psukim before he ascended, unless we assume that the final eight psukim were written prophetically before they took place. But if you're going to say that the final eight psukim, we have this issue, so it shouldn't just be eight psukim, it should be 12 psukim, which raises actually an interesting question. Why did that not bother the Gemara? The Gemara was very much bothered by writing Vayamas, but not Vayal. Al Kopanim, the Ibn Ezra says, it must be that these final 12 psukim were written by Yehoshua. Lest you think that this is a radical view just of Ibn Ezra. So Shechter always points out, Tosus and Megillah, Chaf Aleph Amud Beis, also sounds that way. Because he writes, Per Shiach Kori Osan, Shelo Yikra Shaliach Tzibor Imo, Beparshas Vayal Moshe Kishachosmin. In other words, it starts already from Vayal Moshe. Al Kopan, that's what the Ibn Ezra says. So that's one innovation of the Ibn Ezra. It's an innovation in the sense that he extends what the Gemara says. The Gemara says 8 psukim. He says 12 psukim. Then he has a second innovation, and he writes, when is it that Yehoshua wrote these final psukim? So he suggests that it was not at the beginning, but rather at the end of his life, right? Now, as I would have expected, when did Yehoshua write this? Right after Moshe went up, he died, and Yehoshua sat down and finished up the Sefer Torah, even if you accept that view. However, the Ibn Ezra says that he's somewhat uncertain, but he considers that possibility. Why? Why would he say they're written at the end? Because the Pasuk says, "Baikboro so bagai," right? This is Moshe's buried, "Beretz Moav, Mol Beis Peor, velo yada ish es kfuraso ad hayom hazeh." So nobody knew where Moshe was buried until this time. Now, it would be very strange to write Ad Yom Hazeh on the day that the event occurred. Now, you could have not been bothered by that. You could have said that the narrator's voice in the Torah was one sort of eternity. We'll see consistently, Yehoshua, the Ibn Ezra does not want to make that assumption. So Ibn Ezra says, it says Ad Yom Hazeh must be that this was written sometime afterwards. And therefore, when was this written? At the end of Yehoshua's life. Now, again, first glance, this seems very radical. And accordingly, it is certainly rejected by some of the Mefarshim. I will point out that the Gemara in Makos, Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, sounds that way. How so? If you remember, the Gemara in Bava Basra that we saw earlier was unsure who wrote the final psukim, right? According to Rabbi Yehuda and Nechemia, it was Yehoshua. Now, the Gemara in Makos says, Rabbi Yehuda Nechemia, also debate the meaning of the pasuk at the end of Yeshua. The end of Yeshua, it says, Yeshua chaf dalet chaf vav, v'ichtov Yeshua sadvarim ha'ele b'sefer toras Elokim. Right? So Yeshua wrote these things in Sefer Toras Elokim. So according to one view, either again, Rabbi Yehuda Nechemiah, this was the final eight psukim of the Torah. Right? And seems obvious, the Aruch Lener we have over here points this out, that this seems to correspond to their view in Bava Basra. Now, Zigmar seems to be saying that when is it that Rabbi Yeshua wrote these final eight psukim of the Torah, or 12, whatever they are, it was at the end of his life, right? Already in Yeshua Chavdalin. Otherwise, why is this pasuk here at the very end of Sefer Yeshua? So that's, I would say, the simple meaning of the Gemara in Makos. The Aruch Lener doesn't want to say that. He's troubled by this question. But the Ibn Ezra, at the very least, seems to be, I don't think he quotes the Gemara in Makos, but he's coming off the idea in Makos that that Yeshua wrote them at the end of his life. Oh. So, okay. So let's say that's what the Ibn Ezra says. So now the question we have to think about is, does this possibility that Yeshua added to the Torah later on in life, does that like open up the possibility that for more expansions, that maybe there were additions later, well after Yeshua, right? Again, we already saw what Rav Moshe said about the Anshei Knesset HaGedola. Okay, but is there a possibility of other additions later? So maybe, but maybe not. Maybe we're open to the possibility of Yeshua having done so, but that's because of a special connection between Moshe and Yeshua. We just write about Yeshua was Moshe's primary Talmud, right, in our Parsha, who's the one who stays below at the mountain and waits for Moshe? It was Yehoshua. He was Misharis Moshe. The Gemara in Bava Basra says that Yehoshua was like the moon. He transmitted the light of Torah coming from Moshe Rabbeinu. We find in many ways, the Gemara in Ervin writes about how Yehoshua was a hamshech of Moshe. Yeshua finishes Moshe's mission by bringing the Jewish people into Eretz Yisrael. So maybe, even though we are open to the possibility that Yeshua wrote part of the Torah, that should not be seen as any indication that it's anything more than that. Maybe, in fact, that's why, according to Ibn Ezra, Yeshua waited till the end of his life to complete the Torah. Because if, like the Gemara says, Yeshua was a hemshech of Moshe, so when Yeshua was about to die, that was the end. As long as Yeshua was alive, it was like Moshe was alive, like the Gemara says. And therefore, he completes it at the end, and that was the end, that was the close, that was the chasima, with nothing else to be added later. So perhaps that's all that is implied by here. The question is there anything else? But first, let me take Asruli's question. Go ahead.
Are you able to repeat what you were drawing out from Rav Moshe's tshuva?
What Rav Moshe wrote was that the idea that the Anshei Knesset HaGedola could have made amendments is kfira, but the idea that Yeshua wrote parts of the Torah in the same manner in which Moshe wrote the Torah is not kfira. That seems to be the Geder HaDvarim. In other words, we're not going to say that Rav Yehuda Nechemiah is Kfira. So why is that different than what this manuscript of Rav Yehuda Chassid says? The difference is that to say that it was Yeshua, so Yeshua wrote them in the same manner as Moshe wrote them. So that is okay. Whereas he thinks that to say 1,000 years later, or however many years it was, the Anshei Knesset HaGedola came, even if they had Nevi'im on the Anshei Knesset HaGedola, but they went ahead and made some additions later, that is heresy. That seems to be what Moshe's definition is. We're gonna on that point in a minute. So, okay, were there any other psukim that were possibly written after the death of Moshe? besides the final eight or the final 12? Is it possible that there was someone else besides Yehoshua that made amendments to the Torah? So we take a look at the Ibn Ezra at the beginning of Sefer Dvarim in Perek Aleph. Ibn Ezra refers to the secret of 12, Sod Hashnei Masar, and he's explaining five sets of psukim. Dvarim Aleph Aleph, Dvarim Lamed Aleph Tes, Bereshis Yud Beis Vav, Bereshis Chaf Beis Yud Aleph, and Dvarim Gimel Yud Aleph. In all five of these cases, the Ibn Ezra maintains that the simple reading of the text implies that they were written at a later date. Now, does that mean that they were written at the later date? That's what we'll need to discover. That's what we need to figure out. What does Ibn Ezra mean? But let's just read what he says, first of all. Vim tavin sod hashnei masar, gam vayichtov Moshe, vaknani az ba'aretz, behar Hashem yirayah, vihine arso eres barzel, and takir ha'emes. Right? Then you'll understand the truth. So what do these psukim have in common? So if we take a look, there's a perush on the Ibn Ezra called the Tzafnas Paneach. It was written by Rabbi Yosef ben Eliezer HaSfardi Bonifils. He was in the 14th century. He was from Spain. And he wrote a perush on Ibn Ezra. And he argues that what the Ibn Ezra means over here is that these psukim were written by Yehoshua after the death of Moshe. So let's look at each of these psukim and try to figure out why is he saying this? What's the evidence? So we'll start with the first one, which is what the Ibn Ezra is commenting on, the psukim at the beginning of Dvarim, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Hey. Moshe over there refers to the east bank of the Jordan River as Eiver HaYarden, in other words. What does that mean? So when is Moshe talking at the Sefer Dvarim? He is in Arvas Moav. He's on, again, what we would call the east bank of the Jordan River, right? To the east of the Jordan River. And he calls it Eiver HaYarden. Now, Eiver HaYarden is what you would call it if you were sitting in Eretz Yisrael. In other words, that perspective suggests that the writer is on the west side of the Jordan. Now, Moshe never entered Eretz Yisrael, so therefore, the language of referring to Arvas Moav as Eiver HaYarden, which suggests that it was written from an author who was standing on the West Bank, meaning to standing in Eretz Yisrael, which of course could not have been Moshe. Now, this is not a very compelling raya. Along the lines of what we said before, it could simply be that the text of the Torah is written from an Eretz Yisrael perspective. And in Eretz Yisrael, you refer to Arvas Moav as the other side. The Torah is meant to be an eternal document. It's meant to be read by subsequent generations. But at the very least, the way the Tzafnas Paneach understood this pasuk was that it would suggest that it was written later. Okay, let's look at the other rayos. Sedvarim Chaf Alamed Aleph, that depicts how Moshe gave the Torah to the Leviim and the Zakenim. Vayichta Moshe Satarazos Vayitzna Lakohanim Bnei Levi Hanosim Es Aron V'Sashem Velkol Zeknei Yisrael. Not so clear what the Ibn Ezra had in mind over here. Why is this pasuk so, significant? At first glance, it seems like Ibn Ezra felt that this pasuk indicates that Moshe wrote the entire Torah and gave it to the Jewish people. That would be impossible because, like we said, the entire Torah was not yet completed at that point. So then what would it mean when it says that Moshe wrote the Torah and gave it to the Jewish people? Now, if that is the issue that Ibn Ezra is troubled by, it's not clear how suggesting post-Mosaic insertion would solve that problem. It may be that what's bothering Ibn Ezra is the fact that this pasuk is written in third person, as opposed to most of Dvarim, which is written in first person. If that's what's troubling him, he might actually be referring to a different pasuk, Chaf Alamed Aleph Chaf Beis, Vayichta Moshe Es HaShira HaZos Bayom HaHu, which also is third person. So not clear exactly what he had in mind with this third example, the second example. Yes, Rumi.
Is Ibn Ezra's assumption for these readings that these are almost like gotcha moments of, you know, now we're really seeing what's going on with that it was really Yoshua who wrote them, or it's more that the Torah intentionally wants us to know it's Yoshua, or it's neither of them and there is a separate reason that does have purpose?
So that's not clear, right? We need to finish looking at all the examples, and then we're going to try to figure out what he had in mind. Ultimately, we're going to have to guess, because the Ibn Ezra is very terse and cryptic. All he says is that these five examples are a reflection of the Sod HaShneim Asar.
So just to clarify, in the suggestion that he means that they're all written by Yoshua.
Not even Yoshua. We'll see.
Or else written by someone else outside.
They're
of
all post Mosaic insertions or corrections or emendations or something like that. That's what the Tzafnas Paneach is arguing. It wouldn't have made sense that Moshe wrote the pasuk as it's written at the time that he was writing. That's the way the Tzafnas Paneach is reading it. Now, what does that mean? We'll have to see. And obviously, we'll see how the Tzafnas Paneach deals with the issues with his interpretation in a moment. But first, let's just look at the pesukim. Let's try to figure out, deduce what exactly is bothering the Ibn Ezra. Okay, so what's the next example? Next example is probably the easiest one, the strongest one, perhaps. Pasuk Bereishis Yud Beis Pasuk Vav. So it's describing Avram sojourning in the land of Israel, and it says Vaknani Az Ba'aretz. Right, the Knanim were then. Let's translate Az as then. The Knanim were then in the land. That sounds like this pasuk was written at a time when the Knanim were not in the land, right? In other words, it was written at some point after the Knanim have been expelled, and it's saying, oh, the Knanim were then in the land. Now, of course, when Moshe wrote that pasuk, the Knanim were in the land. So what is meant by that? So here we actually have a comment of the Ibn Ezra on that pasuk. So if we look at Ibn Ezra on Bereishis Yud Beis, he says like this, Vaknani az ba'aretz, Yitachin sheretz Kanaan tafsa Kanaan miyad achar, V'im einena kein, yesh lo sod v'maskil yidom. Whoa. So he says two possibilities, right? It could be that the land of Canaan had already been conquered from some other nation by the Canaanim. So that's what it means, v'aknanim az ba'aretz. In other words, we know that the Canaanim were not the original inhabitants of the land. They were originally, Rashi says that they were originally shaykh to b'nei shem. The Canaanim had thrown out the previous inhabitants. So what it's saying is, at the time of Avraham Avinu, the Canaanim were then in the land. In other words, they'd thrown out the previous inhabitants. If that's what it means, so then there's no significance to this point for our discussion. However, he says there's a second possibility. What is it? He doesn't tell us. He says it's a secret. And he says that someone who understands it should be quiet. So what does it mean? What is this great secret? Why do you have to be quiet? So the Tzafnas Paneach says, I'll tell you why you have to be quiet. Because what this means is this pasuk was written or amended by Yehoshua. And it's saying the Canaanim were then in the land because they're not in the land now. And then, okay, so why do you have to be quiet? Ibn Ezra knew that this is not something that you can publicly share. Ibn Ezra has many different types of secrets in Torah. He has Kabbalistic secrets and the like, and secrets have to be kept secret. And so he doesn't spell it out. He just alludes to it. And he says, if you understand what I'm talking about, stay quiet. So the Tzafnas Paneach says, and then in Dvarim, at the beginning, Dvarim Perek Aleph, he refers to this pasuk. So what the Tzafnas Paneach is saying is he's referring to the second interpretation, the secret interpretation of this pasuk. Okay, let's see the next example. This is Bereishis Chaf Beis. It's referring to the place of Akedas Yitzchak. And the pasuk says, Vayikra Avraham Hashem al-makom ahu Hashem yireh, asher ye'amer hayom b'har Hashem yireh. It's often called this place Hashem yireh, about which we say today b'har Hashem yireh. So what's that mean? What does it mean, that which we say today? So Ibn Ezra says, the Tzavnas Linach says, I'll tell you what that means. It means that when do we say today, because this is talking about after the Beis HaMikdash was built, and nowadays we refer to the Makom HaMikdash, which was the place of the Akedah, as the place where we'll see God, Har Hashem Yireh. And so that is what we're referring to. Oh, now, if that's correct, so then the Tzafnas Panach theory must go further. This can't just be an insertion by Yehoshua. This would have had to take place much later, at the time of David or Shlomo or the like. And let's look at his final example. Dvarim Gimel Yud Aleph. Kirak Og Melech HaBashan Nisham Yeser Arfaim Hine Arso Eres Barzel Halo Hi Birabas B'nei Amon Teisha Mos Arka V'arba Mos Rachba B'amas Ish. So this is telling us where Og Melech HaBashan was. Describes his bed. It's huge, 9 amos by 4 amos. Agav, there's another interesting Ibn Ezra that amas ish means regular person's ama, as opposed to Rashi. Rashi says it means amas og, in which case it's not really telling you how big he was. It's just telling you his proportions, which is interesting why that's important, but that's for another time. There's an interesting theory about that. But according to Ibn Ezra, og was pretty huge, but not sort of a super giant. His bed was 9 amos long. Okay. So what's bothering Ibn Ezra about this pasuk? So presumably what's bothering him is that the pasuk is referring to the city of Rabbah in Ammon, and that was not conquered until the days of David HaMelech. And so, again, that would suggest a later authorship. That seems to be not very strong evidence. I mean, the fact that the bed was, in fact, in Rabbah at the time of the writing of the Torah. This is not even an example like the other ones, some of the other ones, where it's written in a voice of somebody writing later. It might have been very well known at the time, and certainly God would have known where and how big Og's bed was. It wasn't. So it's not really clear why this bothered the Ibn Ezra so much. If the Tzafnas Paneach is correct, but al kolpanim, this is the view of the Tzafnas Paneach. Is this the only way to read Ibn Ezra? Is it the correct way to read Ibn Ezra? So we could actually argue against the Tzafnas Paneach's reading of the Ibn Ezra from other places in the Ibn Ezra. There are other places in the Ibn Ezra where Ibn Ezra strongly seems to reject the possibility of later emendations. There are several of them. The strongest one comes from Voracious, Perek Lamed Vav, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. There the Torah lists a bunch of Edomite kings who ruled prior to Moloch Melech B'Yisrael. Now, according to the first, which kings are we referring to? So one possibility is, what's Moloch Melech B'Yisrael? It's referring to Shaul or maybe David. And therefore, we're listing the kings of Edom prior to David or Shaul. Now, that's obviously an issue, because then the list here is referring to kings well before they were even born. So what's the pshat? So to solve this problem, the Ibn Ezra first cites Yitzchaki. We're not sure who Yitzchaki is. It's not Rashi's father. It's presumably a Karaite scholar. And Yitzchaki said that these psukim were added later. And therefore, right, Lefnei Moloch Melech Yisrael, in other words, it was probably at the time that of David or Shaul or something like that, they went ahead and they added this list of psukim. Ibn Ezra sharply criticizes this solution. Ibn Ezra himself says that it's referring to Moshe. Melech Yisrael is referring to Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu is called the king, like in Dvar Ma'amar Gimel. Let's just take a look at how the Ibn Ezra refers to this possibility. How does, you know, how does he formulate it? So you have that over here from, again, Ibn Ezra, Perek Lamed Vav in Bereishis. Ve'el melechim asher yod aleph, ki bederach nevuah nechtava, oh, sorry, yesh omrim, ki bederach nevuah nechtava parasha zos ha-parasha. That's one interpretation. It was written by nevuah. In other words, before it happened, it was written. Ibn Ezra doesn't like that because the Torah that was written by nevuah doesn't write down events before they happened. Okay. The Yitzchaki Omer B'Sifro, so Yitzchaki explained, ki b'yimei Yoshafat nechtava zos ha-parasha. It was added in later. Upirish adoros kiritzono. Hachi karash mo Yitzchak. So here we have Ibn Ezra's biting tongue. He makes a little bit of a pun, a joke. Kol ha-shomei Yitzchak. Anyone who hears this pshat of Yitzchaki will laugh at it. Ki amar ki hadad hu hadad ha-adomi. Ve'amar ki mehetavel achos tachpan chas. Chalila shadavar kamosha diber al yemei Yoshafat. The Sifra Rawi Lisari. So he says this interpretation is wrong, and not just wrong, but it should be burnt. His, you know, you should go take Yitzchaki Sefer and throw it into the fire. Why? It's heretical. The Lama Tama al Shmone Blachim Shemalchu Shem Rabim, Hine Malchi Israel Kiflaim Bemispar. V'shnei eile ha-melachim krovim v'shnei malchei Yisrael, gam malchei Yehuda rabim heim mimalchei Edom, alidei Moshe. So he has other kashas on it. V'ameh shepirsh lifnei melech meloch al Moshe, melech Yisrael. V'chein kasa v'hi b'shur melech, referring to Moshe. Good. So this is heresy. We should burn his book. Now, if we assume that Ibn Ezra was okay with the possibility of later additions, why does he so strenuously oppose Yitzchaki's interpretation? Why, you know, why does he say burn his book? Even if he thinks that Yitzchaki is wrong in this particular case, but why burn his book? Why such strong opposition? So the Tzavos Maneach is troubled by this himself. He has to address this kasha. It's a kasha, strong kasha on him. So he writes, you have it over here, the Sifra Reili Saref, Perush. Lefi da'ati amar kacha ba'avur ki im nichtiva b'yimei Yoshafat hinei hosfu al Torah parasha shlema. It's one thing to add in a couple of words or a pasuk, but to add a whole parsha, several psukim, that's totally wrong. V'tor amra lo sosif alof, you can't add. Now, well, you can't add a mali, one phrase, one parsha. Either way, it says lo sosif. Apparently, the Tzavos Maneach felt that there's a big difference between a small addition or a whole series of psukim being added. Right? What about the secret of the 12? Hatshuva. Ki hamosif mila o pasuk lefarish mashakasa Moshe losif bobir ein zed dome elamosif parsha shlema ki mila pasuk hu perush avo parsha shlema hi tosafos. Okay, that is the resolution of the Tzavos Maneach. I think it hardly accounts for the strength of Ibn Ezra's objection, though if you maybe Tzavos Maneach would defend himself, that he would say, well, he's writing polemically and hyperbolically, because, you know, he did oftentimes argue with the Karaites. But I do think the Pasha Pshat in this Ibn Ezra is actually a strong kasha on the Tzavos Maneach's Pshat. Okay, well, if that's true, then what then is the secret of the 12? Right? Now, if we assume that the reason why he rejects Yitzchaki's pshat is because he thinks that you can't have later additions, so what is meant by the secret of the 12? So the answer presumably is that the secret of the 12 are psukim which were written in a voice from later. In other words, these psukim sound like they were written or added later. Not that they were actually written or added later. However, that's not possible for the case of the names of the kings, because those are revealing future information that didn't yet have happened. So it would be absolutely impossible for Moshe Rabbeinu to have written the names of the kings that would rule for hundreds of years after he was dead. That would be a problem. The types of additions, all the five examples that Ibn Ezra cites are not problems. You know, Hashem, Moshe already told the Jewish people that they're going to go into Eretz Yisrael, they're going to conquer Eretz Yisrael, that there's going to be a place which Hashem chooses to be Shachin Shmosham. All those things. So what he's saying is that there are these places where they're psukim that are written with a post-Mosaic voice, but not actually written or added later, except for the actual 12 psukim, which Ibn Ezra thinks were at least possibly written at the end of the life of Yeshua. So all in all, how are we supposed to address the secret of the 12? Again, we have two ways to understand the secret of the 12. One way is the Tafnas Panach's way. The secret of the 12 refers to later editions. The second way is that the secret of the 12 means that these are psukim written with a later voice. So you know, what's the take home? What are we supposed to do with this? So if Ibn Ezra, if Tzafnas Panach is correct, it's certainly a view that is largely rejected by just about everybody else. We also noted that even if Tzafnas Panach is correct, they're not particularly compelling. I mean, like I said, just to say that they were written with, even if that's not what Ibn Ezra meant, it's not very, it's not like a pircha on the belief that of Taurus Moshe. But still, maybe he said it. It's hard to know. Maybe he did. Let's say he did say it. So, you know, how then should we look at Ibn Ezra? Does that change the way we look at Ibn Ezra? We said before that this is maybe kfira. So a couple of things. First of all, this goes back to the point that we were saying earlier, what the definition of kfira is in this case. Even Ibn Ezra is presumably agreeing that that all the words of the Torah are divine, even according to Tzafnas Panach. They're just later added. That's very different than saying, you know, that that Ibn Ezra was saying, you know, allowing for human authorship of the Torah, though he did allow for, according to Tzafnas Panach, later additions, it's not, they're still divine. So what Rav Moshe would say about this, I don't know. But if we were to say that the additions were made, let's say, later by Yehoshua or even others in the same way in which Moshe communicated the Torah, so perhaps it's not kfira. Another thing to think about, and I'll take your question afterwards, I know I'm very late, I apologize, is that, and this is beyond, I think, the scope of what we need to talk about today, but something to think about, which is, you know, to what degree do we look at the Ibn Ezra as one of the Chachmei HaMesorah? There's no question that Ibn Ezra was a master of Tanakh. Tosos even quote him in a couple of places, and they refer to a discussion between Ibn Ezra and Ramban, sorry, Ibn Ezra and Rabbeinu Tam about how to interpret Psukim. There were those who critiqued Ibn Ezra very harshly. If you look at the Marshal's Hakdama to Bava Kama, the Marshal questions the Ibn Ezra's scholarship outside of Tanakh. One of the riyas that's always brought to undermine sort of the credibility of the Ibn Ezra is his, in his Perush on Vayikra, Perek Zion Pasuk Kaf Beis, there he's actually defending the Torah, the Chachamim from the Karaite question. But anyway, in defending the halacha, he writes that one is allowed to eat the alya, which is the tail of a slaughtered animal. And Ibn Ezra seems to write that the Torah only prohibits the chelev of sacrifices. In other words, chelev of non-sacrifice isn't aser. The Ramban in Vayikra Per Gimel, Pasuk Tes, critiques Ibn Ezra for this egregious mistake. He says, are you crazy? I mean, chelev is an iser kares, and you just said it's mutter? Now, it's not clear that's what Ibn Ezra meant. Many of the Mefarshei Ibn Ezra all assume that the Ramban misunderstood Ibn Ezra, and Ibn Ezra didn't think that chelev of chulin is mutter. But, and there's actually a good reason not to read Ibn Ezra that way. But what I want to really bring out is the Ramban. The Ramban assumed that Ibn Ezra made here like a huge mistake, right? It's not a halacha, ma'isa nafkamina, because even Ibn Ezra thought that chelev of chulin is asmid Rabbanan. But nevertheless, he was saying something that reflects a major error, a major error. And yet, obviously the Ramban, though he doesn't pull any punches in, you know, arguing with Ibn Ezra, respects him, and he calls him a chacham. And the fact that he made this terrible mistake, at least for the Ibn Ezra, for the Ramban, doesn't mean that he's not a valuable commentary and his opinion should be treated very seriously. Perhaps we could say the same thing over here. In other words, even if, again, I don't think this is necessarily true, but even if we were to assume that Tznaf Nas Panach was correct, okay, so the Ibn Ezra had a madnashita by the Secret of the Twelve. He had a madnashita about Chelev, and but okay, so it is significant, but we could still respect and study the rest of his commentary. Or maybe not. Maybe there is a big difference between the Secret of the Twelve, which is Kfira, and his Perush on Chelev, which was just a mistake. So there's a lot more to say about this topic, but we're out of time. So this is something to think about. So next week, Baz Hashem, we'll continue with this topic about, we're going to move on. Not today, we spoke about the writing of the Torah, when it was written, the text of the Torah. Next time, we'll talk about the development of the Torah Shebaal Peh. Sruli, have a good Shabbos, everyone.
Thank you.
Mazel tov.
Rachtia. Thank you so much.
Mazel tov. Sorry about earlier about the bring up the Gemara.
Okay,
I came a couple minutes late, so I assumed that we had seen it. So
yeah. No, it's
two quick things. One is I think that there are some makoros missing from our sheet. Like I didn't see the Tzafnas Panach or the Ibn Ezra speaking about the carrot.
The Yitzchaki? You didn't have that? I was pulling this together last minute.
I just wanted a lot of course, obviously. I just wanted to mention.
So I'll send that. I'll add that in later. Lean out there.
And the other question.
I'll send it to you. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Meaning working within the assumption that the Ibn Ezra's idea of the the 12 secrets were that they were in post-Mosaic. And that's the issues he took with David's Panach, with Tzachnas Panach's view of reading the Ibn Ezra. What's the purpose of the Torah including that? Meaning, does he see it as like there really the Torah isn't necessarily trying to quote unquote hide that anything was written post Mosaic, and we're merely just observing that this wasn't written by Moshe, these couple of psukim, or is it meant to be like, look, we've kind of got the Torah. I mean, like in some way, it kind of seems like a gotcha moment, you know?
Yeah, I don't think so. You know, it's funny. Baruch Spinoza quotes the Ibn Ezra. He also read the Ibn Ezra this way. He says, look, you know, he was on the path. He was onto something. Not quite. He didn't quite get it right, but he was. That's certainly not what the Ibn Ezra had in mind. Ibn Ezra was a maimon, and he had Yer Shemayim, and he
of course.
He was just, I think, what would the point be? The point would be that, you know, these are amendments. They're not particularly significant. They don't convey particularly important information. It almost, like, you know, the text of the Torah is somewhat slightly modified and updated to be reflective of where the Jewish people were at that time. So since they were,
that could even be why he kept it, why he viewed it valuable as a secret.
Right. Exactly. That's what I think.
Do you think that, sorry to double on that, that Rabbi Joshua Berman's reading with kind of like an Ani Mamin of like the Ibn Ezra and the Ralbag and so on, do you feel that, because I mean, there's like, it's an interesting question of like, just because the Ibn Ezra says something doesn't necessarily mean, like my friend was quoting one time from, I think, Rav Leichman or Rav Leich, in a sefer, he quoted like, how Ashkafa, we still have like our parameters, and that, let's say, with there's a quote from Hillel in the Gemara that like there won't be a Mashiach. He's like, that doesn't mean that you can think that. Like, it doesn't mean that you can say like I'll buy Hillel.
So that's curious,
for right, that's, Joshua Berman, would you say that? Instead of speaking with Ibn Ezra, I'm curious because he obviously wrote a lot about this. Would you say that that is something that still fits within the realm of like quote unquote the within the red lines of Hashkafa, or it's like definitely expanding Ibn Ezra and others beyond? I know it's a big question, but I'm just curious.
Right. That is a big question. We could talk more about it. We could have definitely maybe a whole share on this. Let's get the example you gave about Hillel Sheni, that there's not going to be a personal Mashiach. Right? He didn't deny that. It's an opinion in the Gemara, not the famous Hillel, the later Hillel. He believed that there would, we could call Messianic era. I mean, those are Pesukim and Devarim, among other things. But he thought that the personal Mashiach, the Pesukim describing him, already took place. Okay, so presumably that perspective is kfira according to the Rambam. Okay, so what does that mean? Does that mean that he was a kofir? So there are different approaches to this question. So there were some who said that this shows that the Rambam is wrong. In other words, the idea that you're a kofar, it's inconceivable that he was a kofar. And since he held this view, it must be that holding such a view isn't kfira. That's one approach. Another approach is, this is sort of what the Chassam Sofer says, is that at the time that it was said, it wasn't necessarily kfira, but just like when a halachic consensus is reached, so you're chayv misa if you do otherwise. Let's say the Gemara says, "B'makom l'shem Elazar, you carcinates him Shabbos." So where Elazar lived, they would do machshir meal on Shabbos. Eventually, Elazar was overruled, and somebody who does that is chayv misa. And so it may be that at the time that Hillel Sheni said that, then it wasn't kfira, but a consensus was later reached against his view. And therefore, for someone to believe in that nowadays would be kfira, but it wasn't kfira for him. A third possibility, and this is similar, but I think significantly different, is to argue that there's a concept of tinok shenishba, or equivalent, when it comes to karimuna. First of all, the Rambam says that, right? The Rambam writes that the second generation, third generation Karaites are tinok shenishba. And instead of treating them as kofrim, even though they were kofrim, they denied one of the karimuna, like we read earlier today. They denied the authenticity of the oral law. They're machash magideha. They were kofrim. But he says that we don't treat them as kofrim, and because it's not really their fault. And that so that could be true for other Ikari Amunah as well. This is sort of what the Ravid says, right? The Ravid challenges the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva about when the Rambam writes somebody who believes in corporeality is a heretic. So the Rambam says, the Ravid says, like, you know, they're not heretic. They were just trying to understand the psukim, and there are psukim that do imply corporeality, and even more, there are these agados hamishabshim as adeos that imply corporeality. And so they went ahead and they came to their conclusions, but it's not really their fault. They're just trying to understand the psukim. That's what the Ravid says. So what would the Rambam say back? That's sort of the question. One approach is to say the Rambam would say, it doesn't matter, right? If you're kofir, you're kofir. That's one way to go. The problem with that approach is then how do you deal with the fact that the Rambam called the Karaites Tinok Shenishba? he says that they're nabachnapikaris, and he says they're not achatnapikaris. You could say, well, maybe there's a difference between how you treat them in this world and olam haba. This world, if it's not your fault, we're going to love you and try to makarve you, and in olam haba, it doesn't really matter. I think a more mistaber approach, and again, this is a much bigger topic, is that the Rambam fundamentally agrees that you're not a kofar if it's not your fault. So why then does he believe the corporealist is a kofar? So the Rambam tells you the answer to that question. In Mor Nevuchim, he writes that the reason why the corporealist is a kofar is because it is his fault. Like, he's not without excuse. He writes that, all you have to do is do what the halacha says and learn Shnai Mikra, and you'll see that if you learn Targum, that none of the psukim that suggest corporeality imply corporeality. And so you're not without excuse. Whereas he felt that the second, third generation Karaites did have an excuse. It wasn't their fault. This is what they were taught. How are they supposed to figure it out on their own? So that's really, I think, the Rambam's view. If that's the pshat, so then there's also no kasha from Hillel, right? Hillel came to his view because that's how he understood the psukim. Does that mean that if we subscribe to that view, we're innocent? Maybe not, because we're not innocent anymore, because we should know better. So, going back to this question, on each issue, it is somewhat hard to answer. I think that, when it comes to the Ibn Ezra in this today's question, A, it's not at all, I'm not convinced that he did, that the Tafnas Tanech was right. I'm not convinced he's wrong either. I'm not sure. I think you can read Ibn Ezra both ways. There's no slam dunk. I think that if the Tafnas Panech is right, so then we do have to sort of think about what do we think about Ibn Ezra. I think it is important that Ibn Ezra is not one of the Chachmei HaMasora. And if, in fact, we do absolutely reject this view, the fact that even if it were the case that Ibn Ezra held that way, I don't think gives it credibility, because it was rejected. We don't know he held it. And if we do know he held it, there's a very strong consensus that it's rejected. It's not particularly compelling in any way. And so I don't know how much it changes the discussion. In other words, I don't know how much it grants legitimacy to someone who subscribes to that view nowadays. Just like the fact that Hillel Shani said that there's not going to be a personal Mashiach does not really grant legitimacy to someone who holds that view nowadays. The fact that Ibn Ezra might have allowed for post-Mosaic insertions does not necessarily grant legitimacy to someone who holds the view nowadays. Is it interesting? I think it is interesting. But I don't. My feeling is it doesn't change the question that much. It doesn't change the conversation that much.
Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right.
Have a great Shabbos and huge mazal tov again.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Bye.
My impression was that the Mora I thought that he said that, like, it doesn't matter, like, it's just a metzias that if you don't believe in any of these things, that you can't get into Olam Haba because it's like a prerequisite.
Show me where you think the Mora says that.
I have to find it.
Find it. I'm aware that that's the way certain people learn the Mora, but I think if there's anywhere that says it, it's Dafka not in the Mora. I think the strongest evidence against that perspective is in the Mora. You could argue that's what's implied from the Perush Mishnayos, maybe. I don't think so either. But I'm aware that's the way some people say that in the Mora. I don't think there's evidence for that in the Mora. But show me. We'll talk it out.
Okay.
All right.
Mazel tov. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Good Shabbos.
Good Shabbos. Thank you.